Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. Section A. Dixon says Midlanders need total mindset shift on academic performance. Two more superintendent search meetings planned for Wednesday by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD held its first meeting Monday with the public regarding the upcoming superintendent search. Three people showed up. Two were Midland residents. It is unclear about the third. Those three were joined by four board members, Rick Davis, Brian Murray, John Kennedy, and Tommy Bishop, Lee High School Principal Shannon Torres, Midland ISD Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon, and an MISD police officer who didn't have to worry about crowd control. If district leaders were seeking engagement from a community, it wasn't happening at the Lee High School auditorium. The public will have two more chances to weigh in on the upcoming superintendent search and what they want in an MISD leader. Those meetings are set for 11:30 a.m. Wednesday at Bowie Fine Arts Academy Auditorium and at 5:30 p.m. that same day at the Midland High Cafeteria. Board members said after the meeting they hope to have a better turnout. Davis has previously told the Reporter-Telegram it will be the next board that will pick the superintendent. However, these meetings are intended to give trustees some direction about what is important. Dixon said afterward that residents should take advantage of the opportunity. The interim superintendent has been in Midland since late September. When asked what she would ask candidates for the positions, she offered the following. What experiences have you had in increasing lower performing student academic achievement? Based on the last set of ratings from the Texas Education Agency, TEA, Midland has 9 failing campuses and another 10 D-rated schools. Dixon said Midland ISD ranked among the bottom third of districts around the state. The second question is how a superintendent candidate would attempt to heal a community that has dealt with so much divisiveness, particularly among the adults in the community. Bond drama, golf course purchases, school renaming, a superintendent removal, resignation, and protests. There has been so much taking the focus off what is taking place with students on campuses across Midland, she said. What do you do about getting the adults united behind the school district and trusting of schools again is how Dixon asked the question. Does anyone talk to me about reading? No, Dixon said. Does anybody walk up to me and say, what do we need to do about performance? What are our low scores? What are those areas we need to work on? Nobody ever asks me that. They ask me, do you think we should have bought a golf course? Until we get a total mindset shift back on, why are we here? Why is Midland ISD here? Even me, I spend all my time on failed elections and dealing with not having enough devices and teachers who do not want students to come back 5 days. But again, nobody has asked me about the kids. Nobody talks about my kids. Jump in prices greeted with celebration and caution. Jurgen said there's life after COVID-19 for the industry by Mella McEwen. Crude prices leaped back over the $40 level Monday on news that Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine had a 90% effective rate. After rising almost 11% in morning trading after the announcement, West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange jumped $3.15, or about 8.8%, to close at $40.29 per barrel. The posted price closed the day at $36.50 per barrel. This news and our military's preparedness under Operation Warp Speed have given us reason to be optimistic that demand for oil and energy will be recovering, and at a pace that is linked to the vaccination delivery and the resulting confidence people gain to reopen their markets and work activities. Dennis Johnson, Chief Executive Officer and Chairman of Summit Energy, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. This gives the oil industry reason to hope that movement above the $40 support level is gaining traction and should be well underway in the second quarter of 2021. David Bledsoe, president of Henry Resources, told the Reporter-Telegram via email, "I suspect a lot of hedges will be put in place today. I don't necessarily think better prices are here to stay due to Biden's election. One of his first acts will be to remove the sanctions on Iran, and that will keep prices low." The vaccine breakthrough was just one piece of news boosting oil prices Monday, according to Ed Longenecker, president of the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. In an email, he told the Reporter-Telegram there was also a rush of short sellers closing their positions, as well as comments from Saudi Arabia's oil minister that members of OPEC and allied nations could tweak a production cut agreement to extend it through 2022 if oil demand remains weak. "This is a positive sign as confidence and demand continues to improve," Longenecker wrote. Control over the U.S. Senate is still unclear and will be a key determinant of whether any energy policies can be enacted under a new administration. Daniel Yergin, vice chairman of IHS Markit and author of The New Map, Energy, Climate, and the Club of Nations, told the Reporter-Telegram that Monday's message was, "There's life after COVID-19 for oil prices and the oil industry." Yergin said the market regained optimism that the economic impact of the pandemic would come to an end and at remarkable speed. "This is like a flashing green signal," he said in a phone interview. "We're looking toward the middle of next year when the vaccine will be available." Like Yergin, Ian Niebuhr, managing director at Enverus, said Monday's news from Pfizer indicated a pathway to renewed economic activity, economic growth, and a less constrained world. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram, Niebuhr said, "Our thinking had been there would be a slow recovery in demand. We get news like this and we feel recovery will occur faster than we thought. That could make people want to go shop or jump on an airplane. There's still a long pathway, but there's great optimism recovery will grow faster. There's still some short-term stress, but the market is much more optimistic," Niebuhr said. While oil producers would still like to see prices higher than $40, he said they are higher than in recent days. Still, he doesn't expect a significant change in behavior short-term. "Producers won't bet the farm or the company on everything that's going on today," he said. Niebuhr said he is exercising caution. "I'm a little cautious and concerned. There's a lot of excitement, and that's good. But there's still a long tunnel ahead." Local Democrats React to Biden's Win, by Caitlin Randall. As spontaneous celebrations broke out nationwide after Joe Biden was projected to be the 46th president of the United States, local Democrats said they were breathing sighs of relief at the news. "I'm extremely pleased," said David Rosen, former Midland County Democratic Party chair. "I feel like we can breathe now that the government will be in experienced hands." He and current party chair Kathy Broderick said they were confident recounts and lawsuits initiated by President Trump would be unsuccessful in changing the results of the election. The Trump campaign has indicated it will request recounts in Wisconsin and Georgia and has filed lawsuits in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Nevada alleging voter fraud. So far, the campaign hasn't produced evidence of fraud, and most of those lawsuits have been dismissed. "I just don't believe that he will have sufficient grounds to challenge the voting procedures that states have been using for decades, Broderick said. We really do have solid ballot board counters for those mail-in ballots, and those weren't intended for this election. Those have been in place for a long time. Trump is not expected to concede the election and continued to claim on Twitter Monday that he would win Georgia and Wisconsin following recounts. Some Democratic leaders have expressed concern about what might happen if Trump refuses to leave office before Biden is inaugurated in January. Rosen, however, pointed to similar fears before Richard Nixon resigned in 1974 as proof of the federal government's checks on irregular actions by the commander-in-chief. There was concern in Nixon's final days that he would refuse to leave office if removed by the U.S. Senate and might give illegal orders to the military. His Secretary of Defense, James Schlesinger, reportedly told military personnel to clear presidential orders, especially those related to nuclear weapons, through him first, according to a New York Times article at the time. Professionals in the government know not to pay attention to any crazy orders, Rosen said. The failsafe is the people who have been in government long enough to know that erratic orders should not be paid attention to. He and Broderick are looking forward to the beginning of Biden's term, when they expect he will follow through on campaign promises to combat the spread of COVID-19 and reunite the remaining 545 children who were separated from their families at the Mexican border. They said they're also looking forward to Biden's health care plan and proposed changes to the tax code. Texas Democratic Party Chair Gilberto Hinojosa and Vice Chair Carla Braley released a statement after Biden was announced as the projected winner by news outlets Saturday morning. Texas Democrats are ecstatic Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been declared the clear winners of the 2020 presidential election, they said in the statement. With this victory, we have proven that the arc of justice leans towards good, and we are on the path to restoring the soul of the nation. City reports arrest warrants issued in shooting of three males. Arrest warrants have been issued for a 20-year-old man who is being sought in connection with a shooting incident that occurred Sunday night, according to a press release from the city's spokeswoman. Caleb Robert O'Neill is being sought for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon causing serious bodily injury, according to the release. Midland police responded to the 1200 block of North Terrell at about 6:15 p.m. in reference to a 13-year-old gunshot victim. Shortly after this call, officers were dispatched to Al's grocery store in the 1200 block of North La Mesa Road in reference to multiple gunshot victims. An adult male and a 16-year-old male had gunshot wounds and were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, according to the release. Midland Police Department's investigation revealed that all three victims were at the grocery store when confronted by a man with a handgun. The suspected shooter, later identified as O'Neill, fired multiple shots at the victims, according to the release. The 13-year-old and adult male are in stable condition with non-life-threatening injuries. The 16-year-old is in critical condition with life-threatening injuries, according to the release. The investigation is ongoing. City reports 38 new cases and two COVID-related deaths. The Midland Health Department has completed case contacting for COVID-19 positives received November 1st. There are 38 new cases, the city said Monday. There also were two deaths reported Monday. These new cases bring the overall case count to 6,062. There are 2,113 active cases and 3,577 patients have recovered. The two latest coronavirus-related deaths bring the Midland County total to 103. The 102nd patient was a man in his 50s who was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He died Saturday. The 103rd patient was a woman in her 70s who also was being treated at MMH. She died Sunday. Both patients had underlying health conditions, according to the release. COVID-19 case count, week of October 25th. The 25th, 69. The 26th, 72. The 27th, 101. The 28th, 106. The 29th, 128. The 30th, 163. And October 31st, 123, for a total of 762. Provisional ballots don't lift Galindo past Booker in MISD District 1. After counting provisional ballots and those legal ballots received after Election Day, the two men qualifying for the runoff for school board in East Midland did not change. James Fuller and Michael Booker were still the top vote getters. What did change was the number of votes that separated Booker and third place finisher Matt Galindo. That spread went from 8 ballots on Election Day to 4 ballots, according to unofficial results posted Monday after those remaining votes were counted. Fuller received 1,703 votes, Booker 1,503, and Galindo 1,499. Fuller and Booker, according to the unofficial results, qualified for the December 15th runoff elections. The Midland ISD Board will vote on canvassing of the 4 Midland ISD elections during a meeting Tuesday. Galindo is expected to attend the meeting. He previously told the Reporter-Telegram he plans to contest the election as he has concerns about the number of voters who were incorrectly assigned to District 2 instead of District 1. Midland County officials have previously stated that as many as 31 voters might have been given wrong district assignments. On Saturday, Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves said she expects that number will grow and the investigation continues.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Monday, November 10, 2020. Donated blankets. Subaru of Midland has donated 81 blankets to Family Promise of Midland. On hand Friday for the presentation were Lapaka Brijoli, Finance and Insurance Manager, Paul Hatcher, the dealership's General Manager, Owner, Tom Miller, Executive Director of Family Promise, and Kayla Price, Executive Assistant at Subaru. City cancels Christmas events. The annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony and Christmas parade have been canceled, the city spokeswoman said Monday. The tree will be set up in Centennial Park and will be lit on December 1, she said. MISD public meetings continue. Public meetings continue Wednesday for residents to provide feedback on the upcoming superintendent search. The meetings are 11:30 a.m. at Bowie Fine Arts Academy Auditorium and 5:30 p.m. at the Midland High School Library. Restaurants to treat veterans, active duty personnel. Bubba's 33 locations in Midland and Odessa will be continuing their tradition of treating veterans and active military personnel to a free lunch on Veterans Day. Those who aren't able to attend in person on Wednesday may receive a voucher that will be good through June 30, 2021. Lunch is served 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The vouchers will be distributed Wednesday at a tent in the restaurant's parking lot. Dickie's Barbecue Pit is offering a free classic sandwich and a side for military service members, in-store or online, with a $10 minimum purchase on Veterans Day. When ordering online, use the code VETFREE, according to a press release. Cotton Patch Cafe is offering a free chicken fried steak or chicken fried chicken meal for veterans or active military on Veterans Day. No purchase is required. The offer is valid on Wednesday with proof of military service. The restaurant also will give a commemorative American flag pin to all veterans and active military personnel. Synergy offers tickets for food. Synergy Cinemas and Entertainment is offering one free movie ticket with a donation of 2 canned food items for a local food pantry. Patrons can get the free tickets through Sunday, according to a press release from Synergy. Laura W. Bush Institute to host free webinar. The Laura W. Bush Institute for Women's Health at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center will host Feed Your Mind, Nourish Your Inner Self, noon to 1 p.m., Thursday on Zoom. The event will feature a presentation from Dr. Sarah Mallard Wakefield, Chair of the TTUHSC, Department of Psychiatry, and Stephanie Moses, Ph.D., TTUHSC Associate Professor of Psychology. With the election season, COVID-19, and the upcoming holiday season, we know this is a very stressful time for so many people in our communities, said Angela Knapp Eggers, the Institute's Senior Director. We hope this webinar will provide some strategies to help adults and children navigate this unprecedented time with purpose and sanity. To register for the free event, visit laurabushinstitute.org/events. First Capital Bank recognized by employees. Midland-based First Capital Bank of Texas has been named one of the best banks to work for in 2020 by the American Banker and Best Companies Group. Determining the best banks to work for involves a two-step process, according to a press release from the bank. The first involves evaluation of companies' workplace policies, practices, and demographics. Employee surveys are conducted to assess the experiences and attitudes of individual employees with respect to their workplace. These combined scores determine the top banks and the final rankings. FBCU raising funds for High Sky. First Basin Credit Union is hosting a donation drive to benefit High Sky Children's Ranch. Funds donated by First Basin and members of the public will be used to purchase Christmas gifts for High Sky youth, according to a press release from the credit union. Donations will be accepted through Friday at FBCU, 3316 North Midland Drive.
Opinion. Our view. Pharmaceutical company has good news for local teachers and businesses. Pfizer reported Monday that early results from its coronavirus vaccine suggests the shots may be a surprisingly 90% effective at preventing COVID-19, putting the pharmaceutical company on track to apply later this month for emergency use approval from the FDA, according to the Associated Press. That is welcome news for West Texas. Wall Street welcomes it too. The Dow shot up around 1,300 points Monday, and West Texas Intermediate spiked by about 10%. I can't imagine anyone who will not be excited. Bar owners will be happy, so will restaurateurs and other business people, and those who hate wearing masks are singing in the streets. I'm sure there will be people who won't want the vaccine. The public's health has never been important to them anyway. But the local group that probably will offer the loudest whoop will be Midland ISD's secondary leaders. Some teachers protested Friday that MISD is following the lead of other districts, including Ector County ISD, to put all students on campus 5 days a week. They need their virtual Fridays, they said. They need that time spent working on campus to plan next week's lessons, grade assignments, and take care of online academy responsibilities. Parents apparently will join the rally today. I stand with the teachers. They are right. Midland Online Academy has not lived up to former Superintendent Orlando Riddick's dream of an alternative form of education, or a reliable one to use during a pandemic. And the stories about the lack of engagement and poor academic performance are enough to make anyone wonder about the preparation that went into an online format. I also stand with Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon. I can't imagine the mess she inherited. Her goal has been to get students back on campus, which in turn will positively impact students and teachers. I am a big believer in creating a school district and education plan that is right for a community. And to this point, no one has showed that Midland Online Academy has been effective. I credit Dixon and Midland ISD leaders for ideas that bring more students back. If a student participates in an extracurricular activity, he or she needs to be back on campus. If their performance is poor, they need to be back on campus. If they take a specialized class, they need to be back on campus. Midland ISD should limit online classes to the basics that require fewer teachers for MOA, Midland Online Academy. Midland ISD should shut down its online academy when, or at least not long after, a vaccine is available for everyone. If a parent chooses not to provide the vaccine for his or her children, there are other educational options. An academic chair at Lee High School has said there is no point in Midland ISD testing students' progress because the kids are so far behind. That should tell us about the impact of COVID on our students and what it means to the future. Do I hope there is a positive outcome to this protest being launched by teachers against school district leadership? Sure. Is keeping students off campus even 20% of the time the answer? No. Sadly, it appears companies like Pfizer have the only answer because Midland Online Academy hasn't done its job. Ann Dixon knows it, the teachers know it, and now it is time for the community to know it too. Editor Stuart Doreen. Obituaries and death notices for Tuesday, November 10th. Charles Edward II. Charles Edward II was born January 14th, 1937, in Fauk, Arkansas. He passed away Thursday, November 5th, in Midland. Charles was preceded in death by his parents, Eddie II and Clara Burns II. He is survived by his wife, Joria II, a son, Paul II, two daughters, Sherry Ebeling and Darby II, and stepdaughters, Darlene Needham, Teresa Ferris, and Karen Wyatt. His sisters, Betty Spaulding and Judy Allen, and stepsister, Shirley Nierges, as well as many grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. Graveside services were held Tuesday, November 10th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Juanita Dominguez. Juanita Dominguez, 83, of Midland, passed away November 6th. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens, with Father Mark Woodruff officiating. Juanita was born in Fort Stockton to Benito and Sophia Sosa, October 31st, 1937. She is preceded in death by her husband, Carlos Dominguez, her parents, Benito and Sophia Sosa, brothers, Pedro Sosa, Jose Sosa, and Rudolfo and Amado Sosa. Juanita is survived by her daughter, Sophie Portillo, and husband, Rudy of Odessa, Carlos Dominguez Jr. and wife D of Sandestin, Florida, Albert Dominguez and wife Sally of Midland, sister Mary Viaba, seven grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Richard Preston Jack Chestnut. Richard Preston Jack Chestnut passed away November 7th. He was born November 7th. He was born to Richard and Alyssa Knowles in Odessa. He is survived by his parents, Richard Howell Chestnut, Alyssa Knowles, his grandparents, Cassie Steele, Chris Knowles, J.T. Chestnut, Deanna Knowles, Jerry Downing, great-grandparents, Shorty Pepler, Nadine Pepler, Nancy Keating, Thomas Knowles, Virginia Knowles, Jerry Wooten, Donnie Gray, Janice Gray, Doug Chestnut, and Nancy Chestnut, and a sister, Rosalie Chestnut. He is preceded in death by a brother, Christopher Chestnut, and his uncle, Alan, and great-great-mama, Margaret. Funeral services will be Wednesday, November 11th at 2 p.m. in the American Heritage Funeral Home with Mike Bartlett officiating. Burial will take place at American Heritage Cemetery. Death notices. Dorothy Sanders. Dorothy Sanders, 89, of Midland, passed away November 7th. Friends are welcome to pay their respects from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, November 11th. At Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, November 12th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Fred Dale Norton. Fred Dale Norton, 83, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, November 3rd. He was born November 24th, 1936, in Olden, to the late Ruth Sepulver and Addie Norton. A funeral service will be Saturday, November 14th at 2 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, followed by interment at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Heriberta Silva. Heriberta Silva, 77, of Midland, passed away November 8th. Visitation will be held Wednesday, November 11th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held Thursday, November 12th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 11 a.m. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her daughters, Lila Montoya, Carmen Zubia, Marta Berzosa, Manuela Percy, Maribel Lowe, sons Santos Silva, Jesus Carlos Silva, Abelino Silva, two sisters and four brothers. Due to COVID-19, we ask all attendees to practice social distancing and proper protective procedures. Ray David Guillermo, 59, of Midland, passed away November 7th. Viewing will be held from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Wednesday, November 11th at The Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, November 12th at The Branch, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. Front page. COVID concerns remain high. By Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z, at OAOA.com. A 65-year-old Odessa woman became the 106th COVID-19 death in Ector County on Monday morning, the third local death reported since Friday. An email from the Medical Center Health System and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention detailed. The latest reported deaths come just days after city and county leaders met and expressed concerns that the number of people testing positive for the deadly virus is rapidly increasing and has reached an all-time high locally. One out of every three people who were tested did test positive for COVID-19 last week. These are the highest numbers we've seen since this pandemic started, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said during a meeting last Thursday. The hospital is reporting numbers similar to MCH. "We're at a high point, the sickest point we've been at," Saravanan said. "We need to do more than cautioning people. We're past that. It's definitely time for action." Odessa Mayor David Turner said City Council is scheduled to have a frank discussion about the issue during today's council meeting. Turner said allowing residents to voluntarily choose to wear masks and practice social distancing doesn't appear to be working. Stricter measures, such as making all businesses require customers to wear masks, placing strict limits on public gatherings, and fining violators, will likely be among options the council will discuss. "Unfortunately, we may have to make some very difficult and unpopular decisions," Turner said. "Some people believe it's an infringement on their rights to require them to wear a mask. Guess what? It's an infringement if you catch COVID." Medical Center Hospital officials reported last week that they tested 150 people and 44 of them tested positive for COVID-19, a 32% positivity rate. MCH's Director of Public Relations, Trevor Tankersley, said, "As of Monday morning, we had 56 COVID patients hospitalized at MCH. Last week, MCH officials reported that 62 hospital beds were being used to care for COVID-19 patients. The hospital, which has the capacity to house 50 COVID-19 patients comfortably, say the current demand is placing a strain on the hospital's space. Since March, there have been a total of 7,379 confirmed or probable COVID cases recorded in Ector County, according to the CDC. Approximately 11% of those cases required hospitalization. Of those confirmed cases, 5,820 have reportedly recovered. There are currently 1,436 active cases, minus recovered and deaths, pending in the county. Landgraf files House Bill 103 to create active shooter alert system by Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, R. Odessa, filed House Bill 103 that would create the Texas Active Shooter Alert System. The system would reportedly act like a severe weather alert system that would advise Texans if there's an active shooter in their area, which would be determined by local law enforcement. Landgraf's proposal comes after Odessa's mass shooting on August 31st, 2019, when a 36-year-old gunman terrorized Odessans for nearly an hour as he killed 7 people and injured 25 others during a shooting spree that began on Interstate 20 in Midland County and ended with him being shot to death by multiple law enforcement agencies at Odessa's Synergy Theater. "Our community was rocked on August 31st of last year," Landgraf said over the phone. "Nobody wants to endure something like that again. There are all sorts of ideas of ways to go about preventing that. One idea that I got from constituents and talking with family members of some of the victims we lost that day is this active shooter alert system. This is one step that everybody seems to agree that we can take to help mitigate the damage done in a mass shooting situation." Odessa Police Department Chief Michael Gerke said over the phone on Monday afternoon that an alert system that notified the public of an active shooter would be a useful tool for any community in the state. "Anytime that you have a program like that, that would enhance public safety and make citizens safer. It's a huge benefit," Gerke said. The proposal would require the Texas Department of Public Safety to develop and implement an alert system to be activated on report of an active shooter. DPS would activate the alert system in a 50-mile radius of an active shooter's location on the request of a local law enforcement agency who determines there is an active shooter situation. HB 103 would also require the Texas Department of Transportation to establish a plan for providing relevant information to the public within 50 miles of an active shooter through its existing system of dynamic message signs located across the state. "Unlike the Amber Alert, this is limited in geography," Landgraf said. "The way we have this proposed, that it would only be pushed out to phones within a 50-mile radius of the active shooter situation." The press release also detailed that members of the Texas House and Texas Senate may begin filing bills for the 2021 legislative session as early as Monday. The 87th Texas legislative session will begin January 12, 2021. Landgraf hopes his proposal gains traction quickly. "This is designed to save lives," Landgraf said. "I think there should be widespread consensus for this proposal. Whether it's easy or difficult, I'm going to work hard to make sure that we get this passed, because I think it's a good policy. But I also believe the victims of the tragedy in Odessa and Midland last year deserve to have this alert system in their memory." Juveniles prosecution on agenda. Commissioners also hear Gallivan's plan for child protective services. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will hear District Attorney-elect Dusty Gallivan's proposal to assign some of the county attorney's jurisdiction to the DA's office. Modifying his initial plan earlier this fall to combine the two offices into a criminal DA's office, Gallivan has instead decided to ask the court to request the Texas legislature in Austin add misdemeanor and juveniles prosecutions and child protective service cases to the DA's jurisdiction, which have until now been the county attorney's responsibility. County Judge Debbie Hayes said the change would require the legislature's modification of Section 43.137 of the Texas Local Government Code. Gallivan, the current county attorney, had said recently that he would be considering an alternative because of the uncertainty of the legislature's passage of a criminal DA's bill. Heightening the uncertainty was the prospect of the Democratic Party's seizure of control of the Texas House of Representatives and a limitation on the number of bills that could be filed in next year's legislative session. However, Democratic House candidates failed in the November 3rd election to gain any of the 9 seats they needed to claim a majority in the 150-member House. In other business, during the 10 a.m. meeting in the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, the court will accept a $2,500 donation to the Sheriff's Office from Lodge No. 1 of the Odessa Fraternal Order of Police. The court will also review a $59,770 budget amendment in the Building Maintenance Department for the purchase of building materials. Here, Purchasing Director Lucy Soto's plan to declare surplus equipment and schedule its sale by auction. Discuss purchases made by the Public Works Department from R.B. Everett and Company of Haltom City and Kirby Smith Machinery of Odessa. Hear Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers' recommendation regarding the burn ban that the court enacted July 14th in response to the alarmingly dry conditions that had resulted from withering 100-degree-plus weather. Consider Highways and Streets Department Director Evans Casey's report on the renewal of the Fleet Fuel Card program. The court will also meet at 2 p.m. Thursday in a special meeting to canvass and discuss the general election results. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 7,588. Ector County negative, 28,857 out of 36,900 tested, with 455 pending, 124 deaths. Recovered, 5,936. Active, 1,528. ECISD daily cases, 28 students, 16 staff. Midland County, 6,024 confirmed cases with 101 deaths. Texas, 963,019 confirmed with 8,849,942 tested. Total Texas deaths, 18,769. U.S. cases, 10,413,014 total confirmed, and 244,404 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Free lunch for vets. Bubba's location in Odessa and Midland will welcome veterans and active U.S. military for free lunch Wednesday. For veterans and active military unable to attend this year's event, the restaurants will distribute rain check vouchers, good through June 30th, 2021. Veterans and active military can pick up a rain check in either Bubby's 33 parking lot tent. Proof of service includes military or VA card or discharge papers. Bubba's in Odessa is located at 6153 East Highway 191 and in Midland at 3315 West Loop 250 North, Midland. Christmas Tree Market. The Parks Legato Town Center, 7260 East Highway 191, has scheduled its third annual Christmas Tree Market from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. November 20th and December 4th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. November 21st, 27th, 28th from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. November 22nd and 29th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. December 5th. The vendor market, Santa Claus, and carriage train rides will take place from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. on November 21st and 28th. To pre-order for more details, visit parkslegato.com. From Staff Reports. 284 Days. For 284 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through September 30th, the city has spent $62,843.51 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Closing prices. Posted, $36.50. Futures, $40.29. Natural gas, $2.859. Benchmark U.S. rose $3.15 to $40.29 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Free COVID-19 testing and flu shots. OA News at OAOA.com. City of Odessa has partnered with both Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center to provide COVID-19 testing and flu shots for Ector County residents. Free flu shot and COVID-19 testing are available at various locations, including two MCH urgent care locations and the ORMC Community Clinic. The city is contributing more than $1 million for this initiative. The funds come from the CARES, C-A-R-E-S, fund grant awarded to the city by the state of Texas. The city of Odessa has used monies from the grant to help the citizens of Odessa impacted by the pandemic. The city has also used the money to help small business as well as Ector County students. The city of Odessa has been offering free drive-up testing once a week during this pandemic. That initiative will continue as well. For times, locations, or more information, visit www.testectorcounty.org. That's www.testectorcounty.org. Or call 557-6557. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 10th, 2020, OAOA.com. Hospital CEO, no extra money for COVID patients. By Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Addressing comments by President Donald Trump that doctors get paid more if somebody dies of COVID-19, Medical Center Hospital CEO and President Russell Tippin said government reimbursements are no different for a COVID patient versus one with the flu. Quote, in fact, it probably costs us more to have a COVID patient because they stay longer and they require more intense nursing care or respiratory care. But there's just one code, and it's the same for the flu or if you have COVID. There's no difference. I've had people call and say, well, the reason you're labeling these people COVID is because they pay $14,000 more for every COVID patient, Tippin said. If that was true, I would have everybody in this hospital labeled COVID because we need it. But that's simply not the case. And definitely, we do not get reimbursed more for a COVID death. There's no money in death. There's no bonus for a COVID death. You'd be surprised what people think. Tippin added that the hospital takes every COVID patient and every COVID death seriously. We've had 106 COVID deaths as of Monday, but we do not receive any extra funding for any kind of COVID diagnosis or COVID death, Tippin said. On the employee front, Tippin said employees who care for patients are still needed, whereas the hospital has had to furlough some who were office assistants, for example. MCH is licensed for 402 beds, but routinely staffs 275. The average daily census currently is about 230, which Tippin said is quite a bit. Approximately 54 of those patients have COVID-19. The rest are having babies, needing their appendix out, or having their knee replaced, he said. When we first went through all this back in March and April, most of our furloughed people were people that were in non-patient-facing positions. So, like in my office, we had four assistants. We let one of those go, Tippin said. In outpatient rehab, where people go after they have elective surgery, the hospital had to make a choice because it didn't perform outpatient surgery for 2 months. Do we keep these people on when we know they're not going to have any business? Do we try to reassign them somewhere, or do we just furlough them? Some of them we had to furlough permanently. Some of them were furloughed and have come back. Some of them have been furloughed and come back in new positions. But now, when you see things that we need, nurses and respiratory therapists, we didn't furlough any of those people or lay any of those people off. All those patient-facing people stayed. And that's why we need more, is just because the volume has increased so much, Tippin said. Some temporary relief was available from outside the area. We got a little relief from that through the state. We have some state nurses. We have some federal nurses. We have some federal respiratory therapists and state respiratory therapists. But those people are only here for a short period of time. They're on a 30-day assignment, and then they go somewhere else, so they're not here permanently. They're just here for a short period of time, Tippin said. He added that the hospital requests a certain number of nurses or respiratory therapists. For example, this time around, we requested 65 nurses, and we received 27. Since they came, we refiled our request and put another request in, for another 65, so we keep our requests current and keep them up to date so we're always at the top of the list, Tippin said. Some of them come from other states that are compact states with the state of Texas, so what that means is their license counts the same in Texas as it does from their home state. Some of them are new graduates that just got out of nursing school last year, and maybe we're looking for a job or working for a contact agency, he said. He noted that when they arrive, the hospital doesn't put them straight to work. They go through a brief orientation, drug screening, license verification, and background check. Quote, we just don't take them off the street and put them to work. We put them through a very quick process, but we make sure that they're legit and they really have a nursing license and they're ready to go, Tippin said. Medical Center is a county hospital that is funded by taxpayer dollars. Quote, we're not a privately held company. We're not a privately held hospital that's owned by a for-profit. So we have to accept every patient regardless of their ability to pay. When you're a private corporation or a for-profit, you don't necessarily have to do that. But us being a county hospital, our doors are open to any and everybody, regardless of the financial situation they're in. So, today, we have 265 people in the hospital, Tippin said. He added that he doesn't know how many of them have insurance or any kind of ability to pay. Quote, but I can tell you that usually runs 60 to 40. That 60% being people who have no way of paying, Tippin said. So then think about this. Here you have somebody that comes in and gets $100 worth of services, but their insurance will probably reimburse us about $40 of that $100. Now, imagine going into a grocery store and getting $100 worth of groceries, paying the clerk $40, and walking out. What would happen? You'd get arrested because you'd be stealing. But the healthcare industry, we give you $100 worth of services, they give us $40, and we're happy to get it, and then off they go, so that's the biggest difference. The hospital has about 2,700 to 3,000 people on its payroll, and 1,800 to 1,900 of them are nursing-related, respiratory therapists, nurse aides, and phlebotomists, among others. It takes a lot for each of those patients, Tippins said. He expressed thanks for all of the hospital's employees. I've never been more proud of the people that have found a way to work in this COVID environment and to stay safe, but ultimately to make sure that their patients get safe and quality care. That's from the housekeepers all the way up to the nurses and the doctors. They all have done an amazing job of being flexible and protecting themselves and their patients. It's just been amazing to watch that, Tippins said. On the net, mchodessa.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.